What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to our 90th episode. We're going to hit 100 before you even know it. Follow me on Twitter, at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shim, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery, at IM Database, base with two S's, and follow us as a unit, at Kinda Neat. YouTube.com/kindaneat, where as I'm recording this intro, I think that we're going to get an internet performance. We weren't able to do it tonight because one band member had a surgery and another one had work. But I think that after I return home from my trip to Alaska, which I will talk about in a second, that we're going to be able to record a performance video. That being said, YouTube.com/kindaneat, 40,000 subscribers going strong, or 41,000 subscribers going strong. About to fucking hit that 50 in no time. Thank you guys so much. Tell a friend, remind your friend, tell your friends to tell their friends. Everybody go watch a video, comment, like something. I made some playlists, so you can go through, and I curated some playlists I made a playlist of all the lady videos, all the ladies that have been on the show, and then I made a playlist of all the rappers that have been on the show, and then I made a playlist of all the like other subgenres that have been on the show, so you guys could just press play on one of those playlists and have yourself a nice little automatic YouTube mixtape. What else? Facebook.com/kindaneat, and everything wrapped up in a pretty package at kindaneat.net. Not that pretty of a package. Download the podcast app. Search for Kinda Neat and subscribe. Leave a 5-star message, five-star rating, and a comment about who you want to see on the show. Shit, man. Today we have the internet on the show. I was excited about this interview because this is somebody that's like, you know, you have your little goals and your wish list. And so I have a list of artists that of varying degree of difficulty to get to or varying degree of fame levels. You know, some artists, sometimes we are luck out and we get people that are like pretty famous that'll do the show. And then other times we get people that really aren't that famous who for some reason I can't talk into doing the show. But this was some happy serendipity. They've been on my wish list for a long time. I've always wanted to interview Sid. And then Matt Martians came in too. And I've always actually just wanted to reach out to him separately and interview them. But I knocked them both out at one time. And it's a great interview. I had such a good time talking to these two. And I'll tell you, it was a lot of it's hard. Once you have people that are at a certain level, you know, the chain of command and the emails, it becomes a lot to juggle. And it's a delicate game of trying not to like annoy people. And anyway, I'm just so glad that it worked out because it got built up in my head of like I was pretty nervous about it. Couldn't have asked for just like fucking cooler people. And I had such a good time talking to them. Like I said, I'm recording this. When it gets released, it'll be like I'll have recorded this like almost 2 weeks ago. But tomorrow, right after I leave the studio, I leave for Alaska at 7 a.m. It's about 10 o'clock at night right now. I hit the airport at 7 and fly up to Alaska, and I'm going to spend about 8 days up there, which for me is a long time. And, you know, hoping that everything goes smooth with the fam. I'm sure that it will. I'll be spending a lot of time with my mom and dad and my brother. And I don't know. We're going to go to the fair. And that's pretty much all. That's what I have planned. We're going to go to the fair. Actually, my brother's getting married next summer. So we're like starting to prep the house already because at this time next year, he will already be married. So I'm going up to help like move furniture because we're going to get some flooring replaced while I'm up there. And just various things, and I plan on doing a lot of cooking for my folks, and I actually have an old friend from LA that's going to be up there at the same time, so that'll be cool to show somebody from here what Alaska's all about. And I'm also my big creative plan while I'm there is to photograph my brother and his fiance's like save the date cards, so hopefully I can do something kind of funky and cool with that. And but I'm going to be gone, and I'm going to like kind of try to purposefully not work for 7 days, which is hard for me because even as lazy as I feel sometimes, I don't even realize that I'm like still doing work. Even when I'm like on the couch being depressed, being lazy, I'm still checking my phone and sending emails and doing random shit that I'm like, oh, wait, I'm still working. Like I never really allow myself to not work. So I'm going to just kind of try to stay off my phone for a week and stay off the internet. I'll probably post a bunch of Instagram pictures, but that's about it. I won't be doing too much else. I have one quick little story that I want to tell of something kind of cute that happened to me this weekend. On Sunday, I was just laying around. I had worked the night before, and I was like, you know what? I am going to go to a movie because I like to go to the movies by myself. And so, I don't know, around 3 o'clock, I got my ass in gear and was like, all right, I'm going to go see Amy at this movie. Well, first off, it was Ciclavia. I don't know if you guys know what Ciclavia is. If you're listening in LA, you do. If not, it's very regional, but it's like it's this huge fucking bike ride that goes on where they shut down a bunch of city blocks and like 150,000 people get on their bikes and do like a, I don't know, 7-mile bike ride or something that's like really safe because all the streets are shut off. And it's like a bike parade of sorts. And one year, the year that I actually found out about Ciclavia, whatever it's called, my fucking car got towed because they had shut down my block and I didn't realize it. So I was parked on the street and I woke up at 9 a.m. and my car was fucking long gone. And I'm like, shit, no. So like $350 or $400 later, I was like, I hate Ciclavia. And so anyway, my neighborhood was kind of shut down again on Sunday. So I couldn't go to my normal theater. So I had to kind of like, I went and realized that I couldn't make the turn that I wanted to get to the theater because the whole downtown was blocked off. So I turned and went the other way to a fancier theater. It was like this one in Westwood where it's like, you know, you have to like buy your tickets and pick your seat in advance and all that shit. So I go to try and see Amy because I haven't seen it yet. And it was already sold out because I planned it out so I would get there like 10 minutes before the movie started. But it was already sold out. And I'm like, what the fuck? Sunday matinee? It's already sold out? That's crazy. So I end up buying tickets for Trainwreck. And even for Trainwreck, which has been out forever now, I feel like it's like a month old already, it was still almost sold out. There was like 2 seats left in the whole thing. So I pick a seat way in the back row. I get in there. And since I was going to a movie that I hadn't planned for, I had to wait around for like 40 minutes. So I get in the theater really early. But it turns out that the ladies who were sitting next to me also got there really early, and there were these 2 old ladies in their mid-70s, and for a while, we're like the only 3 people in the theater, and it's just weird that like coincidentally we happen to have assigned seats right next to each other, and you know, I can hear them chatting back and forth, and they're just like, they have these like cute little East Coast accents. And I could tell even from the jump, like right when they sat down, they're like cracking jokes to each other. And I could tell that they were like funny old ladies. And then as the theater starts to get more packed, there's this girl down in like the front row-ish, where there's like not seats in front, but it's the bar in front. So she's got like her feet posted up on the bar, but her legs are kind of spread. And the one lady goes, oh, look at that girl down there. She's got her legs up and spread like she's ready to go to the gynecologist. And I start fucking cracking up. And the lady next to her starts cracking up. And she like nudges me and goes, look, she does. She's got her legs spread wide open. And I'm just like, I don't know, you know. And so, you know, we laugh about that. And then they kind of go back to having their own little conversation. I hear them talking about what I could only think was The Daily Show, because they're going like, oh, what do you think he's going to do now that the show's over? Do you think he's going to be on late night? Do you think he's going to get another TV show? And I'm going like, and they're going like, did you see the Stephen Colbert thing? And I said, you know, I think he's going to end up just doing movies. And they look over at me and they go, well, you know, he already did that one movie. And I said, yeah, Rosewater is great. I loved it, you know, and I was like, this, that, and the other. And they're like, I don't know, we get into this whole conversation about The Daily Show and about, do you watch John Oliver? And like, oh, we watch John Oliver every week, and I just love what he's doing on HBO. I wish he would have taken over The Daily Show. And I said, you know what, Trevor Noah, he's going to do great. And they're like, I don't know him. And I said, you know, I've seen his stand-up special, and he's really funny. I've heard him on some other podcasts. He had a really interesting upbringing in South Africa during the height of apartheid, and being of mixed nationality, like his views on race and American politics, very interesting. And they're like, oh, that sounds great. And I'm like, it's going to be great. Don't worry. So we get to chatting, and I'm just like, you know, not to be rude, but like, it's so interesting to talk to like older people or like older than me who are like so left swinging liberal and watch The Daily Show. I'm like the crazy outcast in my family who watches left swinging satirical political shows. Like everyone else watches fucking Fox News, and like my mom thinks Sarah Palin's pretty tight, and they're like, oh no, oh, Fox News is terrible. And you know, we get to talking. It turns out that they're like 76-year-old twins from Long Island who've been out in California for like, you know, 40 years or something. But they were just funny. And we just kept talking. And we were talking about how Donald Trump is a piece of shit and GOP debates and all this stuff. It was really tight to like talk to old people that don't like Republicans and that love Jon Stewart. That was dope. So then I'm watching Trainwreck, and like every fucking Saturday Night Live cast member that came on the show, they recognized, and they would like nudge themselves. Like, these are like new SNL cast members, like young people, and they would like nudge each other and then laugh, and or like, and like, oh, that's so and so, to the point where I start, where like when they would show up and I would laugh, she would nudge me and be like, oh my God, Bill Hader, or who, or like, you're not, but Bill Hader's like the star, like whoever else would show up. And I don't know. It was just funny. I went to a movie alone, and then I felt like I made like two old lady friends. And so after the movie, I was just like, hey, it's so nice to meet you guys. You guys are so adorable. And they're like, oh, you too. And we parted our merry ways, and that was that. But it was just dope. Like, I already tweeted this, so if you follow me on Twitter, then this is a rehashed story. But I don't know. I went to the movies alone, and then it felt like I didn't end up at the movies alone. And it was a very, like, you know, sweet little human moment. Anyway, that is my story for the week. And I'm excited to go home, and I'm excited to take some time off. And yeah, man, this is my conversation with the internet. And like I said, I had a great time with this conversation, and I think you guys will too. Shout out to Sid and Matt. And without further ado, here's my conversation with the internet. You rehearse at your house?
Yeah.
Are you still in Ladera or no?
I'd never lived in
Ladera. You never
Ladera.
Lived in... Why did I think you guys are from Ladera?
A lot of Tyler used to rap from Ladera.
Yeah. Oh, so wait, where do you stay? At the Mid-City, you said?
Yeah, Midtown.
Oh, okay. Your family's from L.A. for a long time or what?
My mom was born and raised in L.A. My dad was born and raised in Kingston in Jamaica, and he moved here when he was like 20.
Get out.
19, 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Still got a thick accent?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
When he's
just
talking
when he's
to
mad?
Jamaicans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
funny. What about you? Where are you from, Matt?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
You're from Atlanta? How
yeah.
long you been out here?
I've been out here like 5 years.
What brought you out here? Just the music stuff?
It was running when the Odd Future thing started to kind of pop. I came out here. You know, I was working with Odd Future for a few years at that time. I mean, at that point, and
I was gonna say I started to hear your name around that time, like 2010 ish.
Yeah, I mean, I was a part of the original, like the first Odd Future tape. You know, yeah. I have songs on there. So I mean, I was just kind of behind the scenes though. So
you're doing the instrumental project too.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
was it?
Yeah. I used to do Jet Age. So yeah,
yeah,
I used to do production. It's kind of like you know, why not? You know,
yeah.
I'm young, might as well try something. And, you know, kind of, you know, I used every kind of foot in the door I could to get where we are right now.
Right. Yeah, I go way back with like Speak and Caleb and those dudes, and I remember
Speak and Caleb are like they're gonna be best men in my wedding. That's how close we are. So
yeah,
those are my dogs.
That was the thing. I actually have always just kind of wanted to hit you up to do an episode at separate, because I just know we know so many of the same people,
man.
And we just never run into each other.
Yeah, man, LA is crazy, dude.
Yeah,
like
very small.
The
world.
People you meet out here, dude, like. I don't know, like being out here 5 years, like, you know, I got so far just meeting people. Like, LA is just such a, it's cool because I guess like it's, you can actually like get stuff done and work with people out here. It's weird in Atlanta, you know, and in New York, other cities, it seems to be kind of hard for, you know, to kind of be a consensus that everybody in the city kind of works with each other. But in LA, it kind of feels like you're going to run into somebody at some point.
Yeah,
are y'all gonna eventually do something together at some point?
It's a big relationship city, kind of, and there's a lot of scenes that kind of intersect with each other and shit. But I mean, it seems like you guys both thrive working with a lot of people in general. Like, I don't know, I've always looked at you as maybe sort of a figurehead that brought a lot of people together in the Odd Future camp. Am I mistaken in that assumption or what?
I think my studio brought a lot of people together. Like.
Yeah.
That's probably what brought Vince together. Like, that's what brought Vince around. That's really what brought OF around. I don't know.
I think it was just her house. It was like a stable place for everybody to kind of be at. You know, even without the studio, like, her mom's like really welcoming. Like, it was, you know, and a lot of kids, in, you know, at the time, 17, 16, going through a lot of angst, you know, going through things with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You had a place where you can literally go and, like, you know, I feel it now. Now that I'm older, I realize why that place was so special for everybody, because you can literally get away and, like, create.
Just feel safe.
Yeah, it was, like, a safe haven for, like, a lot of kids. A lot of people didn't have money, didn't have anywhere to record. Because I remember, you know, recording at it, finding a decent place to record was... you know, now everybody has a MacBook. Everybody can find a decent mic. But, you know, that is very recent, you know, around 2010, 2009. You know, that was crazy. You found somebody with, like, a cool mic and that could, you know, make you sound decent. So
right.
I just think that's why it was so special.
Are your parents creatives as well?
My mom is super creative. She's really artsy in the kind of, like, if I had an art project at school, she would, like, take it from a 2 to a 10. Like, I would do the basic stuff. This is what we need to do. And she would, like, oh, you should put rockets here. And
she's like, oh, what are those, scissors? Let me get this X-Acto knife out.
Exactly. Yeah. She's like that. But she's like an interior designer.
Oh, cool.
At heart. So, but she's also very much in love with music.
Right.
Maybe even more than me. And
really?
Then my dad just has a musical family. His brother is a producer out in Jamaica.
What actual industries are they in here?
My mom, she has an Etsy store.
Oh, okay.
She sells vintage clothing on Etsy.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Ain't Nothing New.
Hey, shout out.
Shout out.
Search for Ain't Nothing New on Etsy.
Yeah, Ain't Nothing New on Etsy. That's my mom's store.
Fantastic.
And then my dad has an importing-exporting business.
Okay. That sounds like he sells drugs.
Like, something like that.
We import and export dope.
He actually imports and exports like toys and like pet beds.
Hell yeah.
And like
random shit.
Random stuff for kids.
Yeah. That's dope. What do your folks do, Matt?
My mom's a nurse practitioner and my father is an entrepreneur, CPA. So
nice.
Yeah, you know, just grow up around like kind of just business minded with my father. So
right. What's growing up in LA like for you? Where'd you go to school? Like, was your school artistic as well? Was it?
Growing up here was, it was like, you know, it was regular for me. I didn't know the difference.
Right,
like,
of course. You never know while you're in it.
You never have any idea, but I feel like you kind of knew everybody from every school, but that's probably just for MySpace and stuff like that because that got popular when I was in high school. But I went to Hamilton.
Oh, you went to Hamilton.
Yeah, but I started at Palisades.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
Palisades is a nice area.
Nice area, yeah. It was a long drive from my house.
I bet.
Not too long. Not as long as some people, but it was a long drive. But I didn't fit in very well there.
Why not?
I felt like if you were a black like kid who actually like listened to like urban music and like followed that whole kind of lifestyle and you didn't play sports, you were somewhat outcasted.
Really?
Or at least I was kind of outcast.
Was it a mainly white school, Palisades?
Yes, but there was a big black population too.
Okay.
Still,
but if you weren't an athlete, then they weren't fucking with you.
Yeah, like everybody was friends because they were on teams together.
What
I mean?
Yeah.
And I joined the basketball team first semester, and then I realized I didn't really want to waste time playing basketball because I knew I didn't want to do that in college.
Right.
Like, I knew I wasn't that serious about it anymore. But I grew up playing basketball for a long time.
How'd you get into Hamilton? You have to, like, try out there, right, or something?
Yeah, it was actually, like, a twist of fate. My best friend at the time, shout out Kristen, in San Antonio, I think she's at right now. And
that's where I was born. Shout out to Antonio.
Nice. My best friend at the time, Kristen, she had been going to Hamilton her first 9th grade year.
Yeah.
And then got transferred to Palisades first semester of 10th grade, and I was still there. And she was trying to go back to Hamilton because she was like the star of their soccer team.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted her back. But her mom just sent her to Palisades to get her grades up. And so I like went to one of the soccer games with her, like was sitting talking to the assistant principal at Hamilton, like telling him, yo, I play 3 instruments. I have a 3.8. Like, I really want to go to Hamilton. Like, can you like help me out?
Right.
He was like, what? Like, you play 3 instruments and you have a good GPA? Okay, I'll see what I can do. I played just guitar. I had just started playing guitar. I had taken drum lessons for a couple of years and I grew up playing piano.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Were the folks encouraging you and pushing you towards instruments, or were you just drawn to them?
I was just into it. My mom, like I said, my mom loves music. And I went to a Montessori school as a kid. And so in like elementary school, kindergarten, I was playing piano at school. It was like part of my school right. program.
And if people are listening, if Hamilton, very regional, but we talk about it a lot on the podcast. We've had a lot of Hamilton alumni on the show.
Nice.
It's like a big creative high school. It's like, you know, whether you're an actor or a musician or whatever.
Definitely.
Yeah.
To me, you know, I went to a similar school in Atlanta, but what I was going to say is it's kind of cool. It shows you what happens when you give, you know, creative people, kind of kids, actual
like-minded people.
Yeah,
to be like.
A school to where it's okay to kind of express yourself. Literally, like, you right. know, I went to performing arts schools in Atlanta, and you know, we were known for having like the craziest kids just that did everything. And like, you know, when you go around Atlanta, you know, a lot of kids that do a lot of the creative things in the city all come back to one school. And it's just like, it's weird. And it's like out here, it's weird moving out here, hearing about Hamilton. We'll go to these places, these graphic designers or actors, you know, musicians, you know, I hear about new people that go to this school all around the city, and it's not an accident, you know, and it shows you like, you know, when you do actually give people programs, kids programs to express themselves young, like, it becomes something crazy.
Absolutely.
You know, it blossoms, you know, and I feel like that's a problem. I feel like with a lot of schools, it teaches you to kind of not go into the creative fields because that's kind of foo-foo and it's kind of by luck. But, I mean, you know, you work hard, you can do anything,
well,
man.
It's interesting because so much of the L.A. music that's making waves nationally right now, whether it be Kendrick's record or Kamasi or whatever, so many of the musicians involved in that did go to Hamilton, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys are perfect examples.
Shout out Shia LaBeouf. I just met him.
What do you think of his
bars,
though?
He went to Hamilton.
Though.
Oh, man, I don't even know. I have no idea. But just met him and forgot to tell him that we both went to Hamilton.
That's tight. Yeah, so many people went to Hamilton. What was growing up in Atlanta like? Were you an athlete, dude? You're big.
Yeah. I used to play basketball.
Yeah.
I used to be really, really good at basketball.
I believe it.
Yeah, I grew up in Atlanta. I grew up in East Point, and, you know, that's where, like, Outkast from, like, that pretty much those neighborhoods is where, you know, I came up in. So, like, you know, coming to Atlanta is just crazy, like, just being around all black people all the time. but it was cool because, like, I lived on the super black side of town, but I went to school, like, in, like, the suburb mixed area, you know, where, you know, you had black kids with money, you had, you know, white kids with a lot of money. You know, my parents always had money, but my dad is very cheap. And I get a lot of it from my dad.
We like to call ourselves frugal.
Yeah, I mean, no, like I never understood it. You know, now I take on a lot of those traits.
Yeah.
So
hey, you gotta save money.
Yeah, man. I understand why my dad is how. Like, a lot of it's pointless. Man.
Hey, man, when you're a kid and your parents tell you money doesn't grow on trees, you don't understand that shit till you're broke. You know, what I mean? You're like, oh wait, they're right.
Yeah, I mean, not even broke. It's just like I understand why my dad always had money. It's because he never spent it. Like, he just like.
Right.
But when he wanted something, he got it. That's one thing I always learned from my dad too, is like, he didn't spend a lot of money, but when it was something that he really wanted, he spent the money. He didn't BS. And I always believe in like getting what you want if you earned it. So
yeah. Did you grow up, you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two older brothers.
Were they kind of like putting you onto cooler shit?
Yeah, my oldest brother, Mitch, is like my biggest influence. Like he put me on to pretty much everything that.
How much older is he?
He's 8 years older than me.
Oh, so he like.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, dude, he was growing up in the thick of it in the Atlanta, Atlanta music scene.
He used to work with Outkast. And he,
no shit.
He still works with Janelle Monáe. You know, he still A&Rs with her. So
Did he discover Jadenia?
Jadenia. I mean, he definitely has something. He executive produced their new A&R and A&R, their new EP that's about to come out. So
wow. Okay. So you guys both kind of come from musical families.
I mean, musical and, you know,
And hustle.
Yeah,
it just sounds like business savvy,
just,
too.
Yeah, hustling, business, and just, like, getting lucking up. Like,
What's your middle brother do?
My middle brother's a news anchor on national news, Al Jazeera. He's like...
Get out on Al Jazeera?
Yeah, he's on CNN, too, sometimes. Like, he's...
Damn, y'all got a fucking talented-ass jeans and shit.
I mean, hey, man.
Do you have older siblings or just Taco or who?
I just have Taco.
Okay, yeah. What was it? What was he like as a kid? He's a rambunctious as an adult.
He was pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Taco,
a lot more
down,
annoying.
Man.
Yeah, he was way more annoying.
Know.
Way more like. Way more selfish.
Yeah.
These days, he's
Taco
he's
the
really
bro,
cool.
Man. He probably come and talk to you just how he talking to you. He's like, Taco's cool.
He's cool. He's really dope.
I
miss him. He just left.
Oh, where's he at?
He's in Amsterdam.
Oh shit, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
I actually, it's funny how I heard of Odd Future was like Okay, so Speak and I were kind of competitive about trying to put each other onto shit, and he's usually way earlier on most things than I am, right? But the one thing that I can really claim that I put him onto was Odd Future, right? Because here's what happened. Did you ever, back on Fairfax, there was that Reserve store, right, where Fresh Jive was.
Yeah.
I had a homie working there named JJ. He went by Mestizo. You ever meet him?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, so Taco, Jasper,
yeah, they used to spend a lot of time in Reserve.
All those guys, they would be around there, and he would flow them gear from Reserve and shit. And so I remember it was like 2010, very early 2010, and he sent me the French video, and I was sitting at like my computer somewhere at work, I think, and he's like, "Look at this, this is my little skate homies." Like, and he sent me the French video, and it was like all chopped and screwed and shit. But I was on my own. I was like in my own head. I just put a record out and I was like, ah, whatever, this is cool, but I'm going to forget about it because I'm me, you feel me? And then I was like, but this is dope. I don't understand what it is, but it's dope.
Yeah.
And then like a few months later, I seen on the internet forum, the Earl video came out and I went, oh shit. I was like, this is the same dudes that JJ sent me, that because I recognized, actually the person that I recognized that was in both videos was Taco. He got a face that's kind of hard to forget, and I went, no, those are those same kids, right? So then no more than like a week and a half, 2 weeks later, I go to the store to hang out and just talk to JJ and shit, and Taco and Jasper walk in, and I was like, oh shit, you guys are them kids from them videos, and they're like, yeah, we fucking hate that video, dog. Like, we didn't like that. It was like the director and this and that and the other, and I was cracking up, but I was just like, oh yeah, shit.
I remember. No, I think that was the Earl video.
Yeah, well, Tyler didn't direct that.
Well,
yeah.
You know, the funny shit is, that kid who directed the Earl video, and if it gets too inside baseball, Ben, feel free to take it out, but the kid who directed the Earl video in 2007 directed two music videos for me that I didn't let him put out because I didn't like them.
Oh wow.
And so I was like, I was like, I know that kid, and I was like, he doesn't make it.
Seems like it's consensus, man.
how crazy is that? So anyway,
shout out, bro.
Yeah, so if you go back, it's funny, like, and so I started telling him Speak, like, oh man, you gotta find these kids, you gotta talk to them, and I noticed that he would start, Sid, I want to work with you on Twitter and shit. Yeah. And I was like, God damn, it works. Look at this motherfucker.
Yeah, I remember you sent me a video of him. It looked like it was in this room, actually. Like, on one of these mics.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In front of, like, a wooden panel wall.
He used to film those in the IE with, I forget the DJ's name. But, yeah, I've actually done one of those with him.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he sent me one of those, and I was like, I was like, I really love this dude's spirit. Something about him I was just drawn to,
shout out Speak, man.
He's a character.
When I first,
he is. Just like, saw him at Low End Theory
Festival. When I first moved here, when I first moved here, man, like when I was broke, I'll never forget, man. Like he had got some money for writing for somebody, like pretty much. And I remember I was broke and like I was like, we were just in between. Like it was just a weird time, like, because people don't realize you get the recognition before you get the money. Like people know, like there's so many people out here that everybody knows they have no money in their account, but they're on every blog, but everybody thinks they have money.
Right.
Speed gave me money to buy a bed, and I'll never forget that. Like I just paid him back, like. A few months ago, but it's like, because I had to remind him to pay him back. I was like, yo, you remember when you gave me like that bread to get me a bed? Like you forgot? He was like, oh yeah. I was like, well, I got you tomorrow. Like it's just like him and Caleb, like they like at times were like, I needed friends. Like,
yo, we're still using Caleb's bass amp to rehearse.
Those dudes are good spirits. Yeah, Speak was like having serendipitous good luck back then, because not only did he have the writing credit that got him the money, he also got hit at Coachella by a golf cart and like racked up off that too.
See, he told about that.
No, I didn't even know.
At Coachella one year, he got fucking sideswiped by a golf cart and like came up on the fucking like on a lawsuit.
Settlement, on a, like a settlement.
Yeah, on a settlement. Yeah. They were like, yo, here, take this.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Hey, shout out Coachella. We trying to get that real money off y'all. Right? The offers, hey.
Shout out Coachella.
We'll be back.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how do you guys meet?
We initially started like talking on MySpace.
Yeah.
In like 2008. Because I was a fan of the Super 3.
Yeah.
And so I just used to hit him up like, hey, like, you really inspire me. Like, I want to, like, find a production partner, too, and, like, make beats with somebody. Because I thought that it was actually three people in the Super 3. And he was like, he was like, yeah, partners are cool, but you just have to split the money. And I was like,
that's too real.
Yeah, I was like, damn, he's right. Yeah. I need to get like good enough to be on my own or something.
So Super 3 was just you?
Yeah, Super 3.
I didn't fucking know that. No, I thought it was three people too.
Exactly. No, the thing is, it originally was three people. Originally, okay. It was concepted with the friends I was hanging with at the time. I was hanging with this guy. I was going to Auburn University. I was hanging with one of the football players named Mario.
Yeah.
He played keys, and I was hanging with my homegirl, Chantel. And then it was just like the concept of us hanging out all the time. So it was the original concept, but... You know, I made it three people because there's just always something interesting. And, you know, I'm an artist, so I understand, like, you know, visually, you know, that makes things a lot cooler when it's a little bit more depth to it. And, you know, of course, I'm a fan of the Gorillaz, so
yeah,
it kind of, you know, that all kind of just culminated into that becoming a thing.
Well, so as a kid, when do you start making music? Or when do you, what's the process of getting involved in producing?
To be honest, like, I'm not trained in any, you know, instrument. I wouldn't even consider myself an instrumentalist. Like, I just know how to make beats. And I know, you know, I can play keys by being taught what to play. Like, I know, like, how to, you know, make what's in my head. But really what it is growing up on good music and knowing really what not to play. Like, that's half the battle.
Right.
Knowing, like, what sounds
good.
Well,
like, you're seeing your older brother. Yeah, I mean, all like, the shit he's doing. Around, and so it's like.
And like I said, I've been around enough producers that do enough to know, like, a lot of them are instrumentalists. They're producers.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They work with, they have musicians around them to off the ideas that they have in their head.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, for me, it was one of those things, like, you know, I got sick of waiting for my favorite artists to put out music. Like, they would put out an album and just be like, well, in 4 years, we're going to put out our next album. And it's just like, bro, I'm not trying to wait 4 years for, you know, for no new music. Like,
right. What?
Like, I need that in 2 years. Like, 2 years is cool. So it was like, man, I'm just going to start making my own music just to kind of, like, if I need to hear something new, because that does make you feel better. Hearing new music puts you in the new headspace. So.
What was the gateway? What program did you first start
rocking? I started with Pro Tools. You know, it's funny because, like, I one summer I saved up, like, $2,000. I didn't buy anything. I just, like, saved up to, you know, buy all these keyboards that I saw and all these pictures that I saw all these producers.
Just taking out to your dad, man. Save that money.
Yeah, just wanted to look the part. You know what I'm saying? Because when you first start, you think you have to look the part to really, you know, and later when you go, you realize, like, it don't matter how you look. If it's not at the base, you're not doing what you need to do, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought Pro Tools. I bought a big flexed up keyboard and didn't know how to use none of it for 6 months. It just sat there, and I would like.
What'd you get, like a Triton or something?
Yeah, like it was a Phantom.
Okay.
It was a Phantom. So I was like, I just knew how to like hit the thing. I didn't know how to loop anything, just know how to like make sounds on it. And then just like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just gradually, I would start to learn how to use this, and I was like, oh, this is how you loop it. So it just, you know, I listened to my old beats I used to ride around in college to, and they're trash. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the time, it was like, just getting into loop was like really, really, you know, an accomplishment. So.
Yeah. What year was that around, you think?
That was freshman year of college. I was like 17, 18.
Yeah.
So.
And so did you like immediately start putting stuff on MySpace, on the internet?
Yeah, I just started putting stuff because I want, you know, I always, and I still want to do it, was kind of like just a cartoon concept of just cartoons putting out music. Like, I just thought it was cool because it's like, it's, you can keep doing that. Like, there's no, like, you know, I can adjust the style of that car. I can keep growing with it. So it was just kind of like that. Like, I just wanted to put stuff out, you know, just for fun. I never thought music would ever become anything. And I think that's really why it's kind of becoming something, is because, I don't know, it's weird. I find a lot of people that really, really go hard for a lot of things, it's weird sometimes. And the people that kind of just let it be and kind of let it happen, that kind of goes further when you just kind of let it happen, opposed to just like, I got to make it happen. I got to be an artist.
Cause I feel like there's a certain amount of serendipity in all good opportunity.
Yeah,
you know what
man.
I mean? Like, I feel the same exact way. Like, I never thought that. I don't know, like with the music shit, I just completely fell into it, and it's been something that I've been able to, like, you know, enjoy because of that.
Yeah, man.
And you just have a lot less pressure on yourself that way too.
You just let it be, man. Like, you know, worst come to worst, man, like you stop. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like, that's always been my thing. Like, I have other talents. So
when you say that you found him on MySpace, like, did the MySpace shit start cracking for you? Were people like hitting you up for beats and shit or what?
Nah, originally, a lot of people don't realize, like, before French, like Tyler was popular on MySpace. Like, around LA and like the little scene, like the young 14, like everybody knew who Tyler was. So, you know, when Tyler started like messing with me and being cool with me, cause like it's weird, like Tyler doesn't talk to anybody. He's always been like that. Like he's always been like the abrasive, like you, if you send him something, you probably thought he wasn't gonna hit you back. I send him something just randomly, one of my first beats, and he hit me back, was like, this is dope. And it was like, whoa, like,
yeah,
he hit me back. Like, hey, this dude's supposed to be like the meanest dude, and he hit me back.
Right.
And me and him just started getting really cool. It's something he saw in me that, you know, that he saw, like, that he thought was cool, because it was a lot of people trying to get at him at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just got cool, and he put me in his, like, top eight or something. So that's how, like,
hey, that's major.
That's how I found out.
That's how found him. And that's how people started to find
me. Because I was a fan of Tyler's beats.
Well, so that's interesting, saying that he was already cracking in, like, the small L.A. scene. What scene was that? Cause did you guys used to go to the Spliff or anything like that?
No.
Do you remember that?
I remember that, but I never went.
You never went?
No, I had friends that used to go.
Yeah, what kind of shit were you used to do then back, or like back
I
in 06, 07, 08?
I used to stay at my house. I built a studio in my bedroom when I was in ninth grade.
Wow.
And then...
What does that involve? Like, what did you have?
I had...
A computer.
Yeah, I had a laptop. Yeah. I had a Logitech surround sound system with a subwoofer.
Oh, shit.
So I was beaten.
Yeah,
it wasn't stereo, but it was beaten. And I had an AKG C1000 microphone, which I still have. It's a small diaphragm condenser, but it was the cheapest one on Craigslist. And then I had a little M-Audio Fast Track.
Mm-hmm. And what was the goal? Like, what were you trying to make at that time?
I was, my play brother Tyrone, he raps. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to make him sound like the people on the radio.
Okay.
Like, quality wise.
So you started trying to learn how to, like, engineer.
Yeah, I learned how to engineer. I taught myself how to use GarageBand, and then I started recording my brother, and then, started making songs with him. Started producing just because, like, he was using, like, random beats and it was, like, weak. So, started trying to, like make
beats. Like, SoundClick beats and shit.
Yeah, so I started, like, trying to make beats. I made a few that were, like, good, but other than that, like, it was pretty weak. So I got really discouraged a lot. And then I was also trying to make money because I love money. And
amen.
And then I started selling studio time on my MySpace. So on my MySpace, I had, like, beats here. Like, hit me up about beats or whatever, and then I had studio time, like, $8 an hour in my room.
Nice. And so, and you're kind of just getting on-the-job training, and every session probably got a little better.
Yeah.
So, like, if you came into the room towards the end of the $8 an hour sessions, you probably got a better session than the first couple months,
exactly,
huh?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, it was 8 at first because, you know, I didn't have anything.
Yeah, right.
But there were kids, like, a lot of kids in L.A. who wanted to rap or sing or whatever.
And were,
like,
people surprised when they showed up and it's like a 14-year-old girl?
No, because I was on MySpace and they knew I was 14 and I was a female. And they were kids as well. I was mostly working with kids.
Okay, where?
My age or a little younger than me, and a few people that were like years older than me. And then eventually my guest house freed up and I moved. My parents let me redo it because it had, like, no ceiling. The floor was, like, fucked up.
Right.
So my parents, shout out to them, they put in the money for me to, like, paint it.
Yeah.
And, like, my dad put a ceiling in there, and then they let me use it as a studio.
They recognized they were investing in your future.
Yeah.
Did your passions at school change? Did you start going to, like, digital recording classes and shit like that? And, like, did that become more important at school, you know?
Well, I started doing the music stuff when I was at Palisades.
Yeah.
And there were no music classes there except guitar. So I took guitar 10th grade.
Yeah.
And then transferred to Hamilton where they had a music technology class, but I couldn't take it for the second semester because it's a year-long course to start in the beginning.
So did you go to Hamilton junior year or senior year? Like, when did
I
you
went start? In the middle of my 10th grade year.
Oh, okay. So
I transferred
the beginning of your junior year, it got cracking there.
Yeah, that's when really start I started taking music technology. And plus, they required you to take one music class before you could go into that class, so it was perfect.
Yeah,
I took piano and music tech, and then the year after that I took music tech again, which was electronic music where you just made beats all day.
Yeah. And were you always singing at the time?
No.
When did that start?
I sang my first song when I was 16.
Yeah.
It's called Flashlight, And that was like the first song I ever wrote and produced. And so I put that on MySpace and stuff. But it was just like I auto-tuned it. I like put like a telephone filter effect on it. Made it sound really cool.
Yeah. But at the same time, almost kind of trying to hide your natural tone.
Yeah, well, because I wasn't that good.
Right,
and
right.
I knew that, you know. Right. I have a good ear.
Yeah.
So I started really trying to sing like 9 months after we dropped Purple Naked Ladies, our first album.
And was it, have you been taking lessons? I mean, to me, I think you have a great voice, but I mean, I can also, you can just hear it in your talking voice that you would have a good singing voice. I don't know, but have you been like, have you been seeking professional help to just get better and better?
I've been training with a guy named Don A. Holtz for about a year and a half, maybe. Yeah, about a year and a half, I think.
How's that going?
He's my writing partner's dad, and he's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't know, when she reaches out to you, right, what's the deal? Like, were you just reaching out for beats, or?
I wanted advice.
Advice?
Yeah, advice, like, on, like, you know, like, should I get a production partner?
Yeah,
like,
you just,
what should I add to
like
my beats?
Just like when I hit Tyler, you just send people stuff like, hey, this is cool, I thought you liked this. Like,
right.
Just try to, you know what I'm saying? That's when, you know, MySpace and, like, finding folks on the internet was really cracking. Like, you know, saying that you could trust, really. Because, I mean, you always had AIM, but this is when you could really see people's face, kind of get a feel for them without meeting them and without, you know, it feeling creepy. So when you found kids that you kind of felt like would be friends with you or, like, kind of similar, you reached out like, oh, I think we'd be cool. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, nowadays it don't really go like that. You know, you don't just reach out unless it's a girl you're trying to holler at.
Yeah.
Or like,
yo, fam, check my SoundCloud.
Or, hey, man, I need some art, man. How much you talk? Like, that's where we at. So.
MySpace eventually, MySpace was so creative at the beginning, and then eventually it just got so fucking spammy at the end. Like, everyone was just trying to sell you something.
Yeah, and I think
social media in general, like, all these other sites started popping up. I think that's what killed MySpace.
And what killed MySpace was its efficiency. Like, I mean, to be honest, it's too much to run a whole page now. People just want to say something, get off. Like, that's why Twitter and Instagram are so popular. Snapchat, people don't want to run a whole site.
Right.
Older people want to run a whole site. That's why Facebook is cracking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, older people want to have this over here, what they like. What us, we just want to be like, hey, man, this album trash. And just get it out. You know what I'm saying? Just go on. Like, we don't want to be like, hey, this album is trash, so I'm going to let you know a whole paragraph why.
Right.
Like, we don't do that. So
right.
I think it's just generational. Like, our generation just grew up. We didn't want to, you know, put all that stuff on the internet anymore. So now it's just like, Instagram, Twitter.
How were you in school? How was your schooling in Atlanta?
I just went to I went to an all black private school, all white private school, mixed private school, all white public school, black. Like, I went to every environment of school like that you can imagine, like from public, private. So, you know, like just experiencing all types of people, like, you know, I'm very versed in all types of people.
What is the difference between going to an all-black school and an all-white school? Like, what's the transition?
You want to know the difference?
For sure.
Me at an all-white school, I'm like cool enough to be like, I'm cool. Like, I'm.
You're automatically cool.
No, I'm saying I'm cool. Like, it's weird. Like, at my black school, I went to like a very hood black school, and I was an alien because I was very proper, and they didn't understand a black person that didn't dress a certain way, talk a certain way. People thought I was gay at some point because I didn't, like, and that was confused. Like, that was a very confusing point for me because I was like, what? Like, just because I literally would, like, dress regular. I would talk regular. I didn't have to. It would be like thug, dude. So, I don't know. But then when I was in, you know, private schools, like, I was the troublemaker. Like, and I mean, this, I'm just being real. Like, when I was in all white private schools, just like, I was the troublemaker. It was like everything I did was so bad. But when I was in the black school, everything I did was like, oh, just, you're so great. Here's an A. You just.
Right.
So it's just interesting. Like, and I was the same way. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I'm not going to lie, going to all white private school made it when I did go to public school was just like piece of cake. Like, nothing. So, I mean, it's pros and cons to both areas. You know what I'm saying? Whereas when I was in the all-black public school, like, I was around, like, I got to deal with, like, really hood people. So, to this day, I'll go to the hood and know protocol, know who not to mess with. Like, you just know those things. And, like, even with Sid, her growing up in areas where you have to deal with and knowing people where you have to deal with that,
as well as knowing people who don't have to deal with that, you know how to deal with all people. Like, right. I can go to the hood and be mm-hmm. straight, or I can go to a mansion with people who, you know, do crazy stuff and right. be straight, but talk to them the exact same way. A lot right. of people can't do that. A lot right. of people got to right. be, hey, Shawty, what's good? And then go to the rich folks like, hi, how you doing? Nah, I talk the same about everybody. Right. So
it taught you how to be a chameleon in a sense.
Not mean it really a chameleon, but just really be yourself. Like, right. cause you know, you're gonna meet a lot of different people, but the person you're gonna stay with is yourself. So,
chameleon is the wrong term. You're right. It's just, I mean, yeah, that's, no, I mean, that's exactly.
No, just be honest, you're right, though, because I do know how to adjust in most situations.
You can go through whatever situation comfortable in yourself.
Yeah,
and
I can adjust
that,
to it. We're all kind of like that in our band. Like, I'd say that's the good thing about our band is we're all very personable people. We're all very very, you know, consider, we try to adjust to the environment that we're in before we try to make it, you know, adjust to us. So right. I say, like, that's right. one thing about us. Like, we're very respectful of environments and,
right.
you know, where we are and the people we're speaking to.
It makes touring really easy.
Touring, everything easier, man. We don't have any
Our
problems.
Our tour managers love us.
Yeah, right. Many people love
us. Venues love us.
Right. Let's just go with the flow.
Yeah, we leave the dressing rooms fairly clean. Like, you know, so
I think that's great to like. Yeah. I always say, like, you know, if you're gonna go someplace, don't leave footprints on the carpet. You know what
right,
I mean?
When
you play shows and shit, it's like, man, you know, talk to the sound guy, remember his name.
No,
like,
yeah. dude.
And the next time you come back, your sound is
gonna
sound
even
better.
Security, bro.
Yeah.
With me, I have a problem with security. Like me, I get off on security if they, you know, security can show false authority at these shows, and I sometimes put him in a place. But if I know that if I notice the security guard is like he's like cool, you know, or even if I see he's gonna be like that before, like while we at soundcheck, I'd be like, hey, what's your name, man? Matt,
yeah,
how you doing, man?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And I notice every time throughout the show, they'll be cool. They don't ask for your wristbands no more.
Totally.
Yeah.
And every time you walk
regardless.
By him, you give him a little tap.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yo, thanks, you're doing a great job.
Yeah,
like,
what's up, bro?
Helps, man.
Yeah,
oh,
man.
And then you don't have any problems getting all the rest of your people in through the door.
Oh, yeah, they don't trip.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, yeah, you the man. You the homie. You the homie. Because a lot of those people, the one thing they hate about those jobs, and I study people a lot, and I notice a lot of people just overlook those types of people all day.
Straight
and if you just acknowledge their existence that, hey, I see you, what you're doing, bro. I appreciate you keeping us safe.
I do that now, even when I'm going to a regular concert.
Yeah.
Like, I was security, hey, you doing?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Hey, man, I've come to security when I've gone back into security, like, hey, man, I appreciate you being, like, nice to us, because you really could have been mean. And they'd be like, and a lot of them like, man, you know, like, it's just unnecessary, man. Like,
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Just
and the thing that people forget is, like, that's what they do every fucking day. So
they,
like,
don't care.
When you're at a venue and you're like walking, if you're walking in thinking like, I'm the fucking man, this is my show, I'm about to pack this shit out, they're like, well, you
people
know, Elton John was here
out.
Last
right.
night, like, so
like,
fuck you, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, no. See, the only difference is with that is now if a sound guy does have attitude, then, you know, that's a problem. Like, I mean, I would say that, like, you know, you know, I feel like you should always show respect to the music that's being performed in the venue. So, like, we'll get sound guys with attitudes, but then again, we'll get sound guys that are incredible. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. It all depends on experience and, you know, how passionate they really are about sound. Because you can tell people who really just are work at the venue that know how to do sound and people who are sound guys. That is what they're passionate about.
Totally. Where'd you go to school? You started going to college in Atlanta?
I went to Auburn University out of high school, and then I left, you know, what was it, junior year, because I was just unhappy. You know, like,
what were you thinking about studying?
I was studying business administration, just following what my dad did. But, you know, all the stuff they teach in school, like, I learned from my dad growing up, pretty much. Like, the gist.
And the music bug was already hitting you at that point.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, even though I wasn't making music when I was 17, like, all throughout my life, I was always a dude that had, like, the, like, cool, different music that, like, nobody knew where I got it from. So,
you got to be up on shit.
Because my brother had it. It was before the internet.
Hey,
so
my brother was... Yeah. I have a younger brother, and it's the same way. Like, I was the older brother, but even in my school, I was, like, into the cooler shit.
Yeah.
And, like, into, like, different music. And then I would pass it down to
pass
him.
Your little bro. He'd
and
be
he was
super
like,
cool.
He was, like, the
that's
man
how it worked.
That
my
shit.
Brother was cool in his room, so he would give me, like, the cool Outkast, like, NERD stuff early.
Yeah.
And, like, people at my school were like, what is this, but I felt like the coolest, you know. Of course, now it's like, you know, Pharrell, NERD, that was classic stuff, man.
Yeah.
But when it came out, folks was not messing with it like
that.
I remember, bro.
I actually think that Nerd has gotten much more praise in hindsight than they did at the time.
Oh, no, no, no. Right. That's right. And that's what we see. And that
it was kind of critically destroyed at the time.
And that's why we like look at our music the same way. Like, we notice our first album now, people were like, that's such a great album. But it's like, when it came out, y'all was hate. It's just, yeah. I feel like when you do something that's so different, I think people initially going to not like it because
they
don't understand it.
Right.
But when they start seeing the flowers that blossom from the soil that you put down, they're like, oh, look at the soil. I think
contextually, contextually, it makes sense that there was an initial backlash against it just because, like, it was so out of left field, and Odd Future was kind of like at that moment of power where you could do whatever the fuck you guys wanted. You know what I mean? So I bet you a lot of people were kind of like, oh, who does she think she is singing? Like, where did this come from?
This album is when we just got out of that. It was like that, but like until this album came out, it was like a lot of people thought we rapped. It was the first album I would say like people really gave it a chance that really had no business listening to it, because it's different between people who were Odd Future heads, you know, checking us out because they have the immediate segue. But we noticed with this album, we have people who don't even listen to Odd Future, like fans of ours.
I really like that tweet you made the other day where it was like, don't call us neo soul or whatever, classic soul, whatever you said. You're like, it's just soul music.
You don't know why I said that, because I feel like with a lot of these newer blogs and the bloggers, I feel like they have to create these new subgenres because they're bored. They want to be sound creative and sort of like,
well, and everyone wants to compartmentalize things to understand them, but it's like, you know, some things are just music.
It's just what is future soul? That makes no sense. What is neo soul? Because the neo soul from 15 years ago is not new no more. Are we neo neo?
When you look
neo?
Back at it, it's just like, that's
are
what
we
90s
new neo soul? Soul? Yeah. So what happens in 10 years? Is it neo, new neo?
Future neo. Neo.
Future neo. Like, it's soul music.
Generation 6
soul.
Dirty Sprite neo soul.
Yeah, we did an interview the other day with somebody, and they were like, what do you feel about alt R&B, like Frank Ocean, like The Weekend, like what?
That's his R&B.
Miguel, I'm like,
those guys have hit records.
I'm like, what? You know? They have some of the most like traditionally hit records. Like, how is it alternative R&B? But what it is it's a generation that has not seen it before, so they have to bring it, have a name for it for their generation instead of just being like, it's soul music. They want to make it feel like, well, it's alternate R&B because it's. This is my problem with listening to music, so I can't just call
Usher,
it.
You know,
it's not. Listen to all the New Weekend songs, dude. They're tradition. They're real, and I actually like the New Weekend music. Like, it's actually pretty good. The I Can't Feel My Face song, like, it's really traditional. Taking it actually back. Look at Miguel. He's taking it back to the Prince traditional.
R&B.
You know what I'm saying? Even Frank.
It,
Frank has like traditional R&B roots. Like, so with me, it's like I told him I was like, actually, it's not alternative. It's actually traditional. Alternative aren't like, what does that mean? Like, what do you call George Duke? Like, what do you call Herbie Hancock? Like, what are you calling these people that did this future R&B, this future soul? Like, what do you call them? They did it in the 70s. Like, what are you saying? So, and when you ask that, you know, they're kind of just like, yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah. So to me, and like I say, if you look up interviews with D'Angelo and the Soulquarians, they don't even like the word neo soul.
Yeah,
because they hated it when it came out. They were like, "Why?" They hated it for the reason
like
it.
When you listen to Sugar, that's straight up
soul music.
There's only a couple songs that are sample based.
What is
on
neo
there,
about?
Just,
what
yeah.
is neo about?
I mean,
Brown Sugar.
All great musicians on there. Soul record.
Yeah. So me, like neo soul, like, you know, the people who everybody says pioneer don't even acknowledge the word. So, you know, I'm not going to acknowledge it if they don't acknowledge it. You know what I'm saying? Man. So we're soul music. You know, we make really good soul music. You know, different soul music. We may make, you know, some psychedelic soul this song. We may make some deep soul, whatever. But we're soul music.
I want to just, like, make an observation that I love the opposite energy that you guys kind of give off. Because you're just kind of like... lay back, taking it in, and smiling, and listening, and he's getting riled up and passionate.
It depends on the subject.
And I love that.
It depends on the subject.
Well, I'm the same way as you. Like, I'm not the laid back person. I'll get on a rant, and I'll be
I just hate the genre. That's just one of them subjects I really don't like as a genre.
Where I'm going with that, though, is, does that make for interesting chemistry when you guys are making music together?
What do you mean?
The fact that maybe, like, you guys are a little opposite in that you're pretty, I'm just guessing, you seem kind of kind of intense and you're very laid back.
Nah, see,
with
that's
it.
The thing. I would say it's the context.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's certain things that I'm very laid back about that she may not be intense about, but she's a little bit, places a little bit more importance. Like, you ain't, like, she has to have it, and where I'm just like, hey, it's cool. Yeah. But then there's certain things where I'm like, no, and she's like, it's cool. Yeah. So it does
work. I try
work.
To maintain this kind of, like...
I've always said that you just I, even before I've met you, I've just met you in passing a few times, but you have a certain aura about you that is very like kind of relaxing and zen and just like you know you seem cool in whatever the situation is.
I've gotten really good at keeping staying like calm no matter what's going on, especially through putting out three albums now on a major label. You know, it's stressful, you know, especially the first couple go arounds because you don't know how the game works. But once you figure out how it works and you learn that none of it is personal, it's business.
Right.
You know, people got to feed their family. There's a whole company that's got to make some money off of you.
Right.
And you get it because they give you the money to shoot the videos. Like, we wouldn't have no music videos if it weren't for them. So, you know, you learn... You just gotta, okay, that didn't work out. Okay, all right, what's next?
Right. Well, so let's talk about it. What inspired you to move to LA to start making it more of a thing 5 years ago?
To be honest, because it's like, you know,
I really
hit a point where it was just like, you know, what's the point of really working, you know, living your life just to work? Like, you might as well pursue things while you're young, because I don't want to be one of those people waking up 30, 35. You know, kicking myself in the face like, dang, I had a really crazy opportunity and I got scared. I see so many people that I know that, you know, come up with advice that are so scared to make these jumps. And I'm like, dang, if I were to listen to everybody, literally everybody when I was in Atlanta, like, I would not have gotten any. I wouldn't have traveled the world. I wouldn't be able to do any of this stuff if I would have just listened to people who told me that to not leave, to be safe. And now I preach the whole not be safe thing, because what's the worst that can happen, dude? School is always going to be there. Unless you're doing some illegal stuff, you can always get you a job. Like, go for your stuff while you have the time, while you're able-bodied. Why not?
So I love that.
That's why I dip.
I always say that. Like, jump off the cliff and you'll probably land in some warm water.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
I mean?
Like, aim for the stars, man. Because to be honest with you, what most people don't do is they don't start. And I realize that. And most people don't start the process. When you start the process, 30 days later, you're 30 days away from the process.
Yeah.
And
by
gone.
The time a lot of these people do try to start, when they finally get it through
they
their
finally
head,
get it.
It's too late for too a late. Lot of them. Like, let's be real, this music industry is
it's a young man's game.
It's a young man's game, and it's a timing game.
It is.
Timing is everything in this industry, you know, so.
The other thing I've really been starting to notice about the music industry as I get older is that it's really a first impressions game, too. Like, if you fuck up your first impression, it's an uphill
it's
battle
really
to
hard.
Ever come back from
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but no, it's,
really
yeah, it's and it's very, and the stigma's like, you know, with social media, you know, when you have a stigma on you as an artist, it stays on you. Like, if somebody disses you, people gonna think about you a certain way after it, you know what I'm saying? Like, so with us is like, even with on Twitter, like how we run our band, like I'm very aware, like I check my band members' Twitters, like just so they don't say nothing
stupid, right?
Because like,
well, particularly now, because everything is so hypersensitive and everyone is so like, America's going through like every, whether it be anti-shaming or anti-this,
because everybody wants to be a victim.
Everybody wants
being
to be a victim.
Being a victim is popular right now.
And you
now.
Know what the funny thing is, everybody wants to be a finger pointer, accusing you of like, you know, they want to point out who
you're. It makes them feel better about what they hate,
right?
Because they see you hating, and it's cool to say. That's all it is, man. Like, we're just in a time where, and that's what I tell my band members, like, you know, we got to our. You know, our band ranges from 17 to 26.
Yeah.
So, you know, those guys, like, I've been around Sid, Tyler. I know, like, there's certain things you can't say. There's certain things you can't say about certain artists. There's certain things you just can't say because, A, you're representing more than just yourself at a point.
Right.
Straight
like,
up.
I tell them all the time, like, you're representing me and Sid.
Yeah.
You can't say this.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't just do this because, you know, A, you say you want to get to a certain level, you have to hold yourself accountable to some point.
And it's the same with us. Like, we represent them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we represent them. There's certain stuff I want to say all the time, but it's just like...
That's why I have a private Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything.
When I really feel some kind of way about something and I really want to say it, like, I go on my private Twitter where only my close friends, you know, can...
Yeah, but just I'm very aware of, like, that, you know, like... What people think of you can change every day because of Twitter, man. Like,
absolutely.
One sentence can completely change how people look at you, dude.
Right.
So, with me, it's like, you know, with our Twitter, how we hold ourselves, it's just like, be smart, dude. Like, that's how we just basically run our whole, just be smart, dude.
So with that thought in mind about, like, first impressions, what would you say to people now who, what I mean by that is there are certain rappers that if you say their name to me, I go, I haven't really listened to that much of their music, but I know what they sound like, and I know I wouldn't like them, right?
Right.
So for those people, when you say the internet, and they go, oh, I'm not going to listen to Ego Death because I already know what the internet sounds like. How have you guys grown in these last few years? Like, how is this record different from the last couple?
This record's different because I think sonically it's a step up. And, you know, that's funny you said that. Like, a lot of the people, it's like, you know, a lot of the reception that we begin are a lot of people that are just like, wow, I was never going to listen to something like this from, you know, because to be honest, coming from Odd Future, it turned a lot of people off. It's very polarizing. You either really love it and get it, or you just don't get it.
And it's funny because, like, we could have never done any of this without them.
Yeah, without them.
Without that foundation and the business platform
that
it gave us.
But with that foundation, we had to work out of the mud, out of the background.
Out of the stigma.
Oh, it's funny how that Odd Future label can be sort of a blessing and a curse. It's got that, it's got like either that automatic positivity or that stigma depending
with
on what
everybody.
Side of the fence you're sitting
yeah,
on.
Yeah, but then
I mean?
I saw it like, you know, you have a record deal where you're a partner with a major company, like we can put out albums. I'm like, dude, like let's put these albums out. You know, like we have an opportunity to put out, we have three albums on Columbia now just from really taking opportunities. And like, I guess, you know, like me, I told you, like using every, you know, crack in the door to just kick it open, man. And like, you know, I never wanted to be one of those people that had opportunities to say, like, that's one of my biggest fears, waking up at a certain age and regretting not using opportunities and getting opportunities that people would kill for, literally.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we've had many opportunities that I'm blessed to have that most artists would kill to be able to have. So
yeah. Oh, dude, I mean, you guys are going to the UK next month.
Yeah, man. So,
yeah.
And I've been making
just
music 15 years. I still never been to the UK, so you guys are doing it.
Yeah, just being able to support and being able to tour on a band with that many people and actually be able to afford it.
Right. That's expensive.
It's a huge thing. And being a black, and being a black band at that is another thing, because there hasn't been a touring black band that makes this type of music in a long time, that has a following that's actually, you know, has young people that are in the scene as well as older people that have don't even know what Odd Future is.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it to me, man. Like what we're trying to do with it, like just get it to everybody, man.
Right. I think the new record's beautiful. Did you guys write it together, or what's the writing process like?
With this album, we got all the beats together. He did the drums on most of the beats.
Me and Steve did most of like the concepting on like the instruments.
Yeah,
the guitar player Steve.
And then Chris did some drums on some tracks. Patrick did some bass on some tracks, and he produced Penthouse Cloud with one of his production partners. Jamil played keys.
Yeah, everybody's all over. It's a very collective, you know, effort. You know, there's really no songs that just somebody produced by themselves.
Right.
But we got all the beats together. And then a lot of them I had like ideas to, or I had half the song written or something. And I have a guy I write with mostly named Nick Green.
Yeah.
Who I wrote Don't You with. And after that, I was like, we got to keep writing because that was great. So I wrote a lot of it with him, most of it with him. And then I wrote two songs with a girl named Taylor Parks. James Fauntleroy wrote For the World for me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then
he's a great songwriter.
Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. Tyler wrote Palace.
Right.
And Steve wrote Curse.
Yeah.
Of course, for
Curse. Right, right.
And made the beat by himself.
Nice. How long is the recording process for something like this?
I kind of knocked it out. So I had a lot of, like, for almost every song I had, before we recorded it, I had a demo.
Right.
You know, I recorded just a rough version or whatever. And a lot of, I basically booked out 3 weeks with my writing partner. I paid him to vocal produce. I paid my friend Duran Bernard, who does background singing for Erykah Badu and his own solo stuff as well. I paid him to do background vocals for me, and I just booked out 3 weeks for them, like Monday through Friday for 3 weeks, every day at my house.
Yeah.
Let's knock this out. I got all the songs written. The demos are recorded. I just got to re-record them.
Right.
And so what was interesting was trying to re-record a lot of it was so difficult because my voice has been changing a lot, like, really fast. Like, I just, people might not realize, but I kind of just started singing, like, you know, when we made the first album.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm alongside.
You're learning your instrument as you go.
Yeah, I'm alongside a lot of people who have been doing it since they were kids, and it's really intimidating for me. So I try to, like, make up for it in other ways I find myself doing. But
well, and it's so vibey and an emotional record as well, so finding that, like, headspace to get into is probably difficult in front of people too.
Exactly. And so, for, like, honestly, I only ended up re-recording half of it, so, like,
a lot of the demos got kept.
Yeah, half of the vocals are old.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
old.
Right.
And it's interesting having to sing them live too, because, like I said, my voice has even changed since I re-recorded stuff, and I have to relearn how to sing everything, like, every couple months.
Right.
It's very interesting.
That is interesting. That seems scary.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
Very scary.
That's another question I have for you. Producers are notoriously introverted, and, like, engineers in particular, like, oftentimes people that work in studios are just kind of weirdos. Let's keep it 100.
Yes.
did you ever have stage fright stuff that you had to deal with?
Definitely.
Because, I mean, even in the early Odd Future days, like, they were pushing you as a DJ. You'd be on stage and stuff.
Yeah, and so that's where I had to, like, kind of get out of my show and, like, learn confidence. Learn that, like, these kids are more afraid of me than I am of them.
Were you shy growing up?
Yeah, yes.
Why?
I was very quiet.
Yeah.
I've always been very insecure.
Really?
Never quite knew, like, still to this day, like, you know, how I dress. I was telling the guys maybe, like, last week, like, I find myself always trying to find the perfect balance of, like, you know, color and not color and feminine and masculine, and, like, that was my whole, like, I'm still going through it. I was
That's
a late
so interesting
bloomer.
Because I would say outwardly you're very good at projecting that you're comfortable in your skin. I would
well,
never
you.
Guess that, but that's interesting to hear.
Well, it's been a long process.
Yeah.
I didn't really get that comfortable until I started touring with Odd Future.
Yeah.
Until I grew my hair natural.
Right. Why? You used to have, like braids and stuff. I saw an old picture of you. You had braids in and shit.
Yeah, I had cornrows a lot as a kid, just in the summer so I could swim. And then I had straight hair, pressed hair for a long time. And so, like, majority of my life, my hair was straight and pressed. So by the time I wanted, like, when I got older and had my own mind and wanted to try something different, I couldn't, because my hair was just straight at that point. I didn't have a perm, but I had been getting it straightened every
for
2 weeks
long.
For my whole life.
Right.
So I decided I wanted to cut it and try something new, try a short haircut for a while. And I cut it, ended up getting a perm anyway, and, like, doing some, like, curl mohawk shit. Then I decided that was too much maintenance involved in that. I'm going to just go natural and keep it short. But
and that
yeah,
was a big confidence booster, just kind of, like, changing up that, like, something
definitely.
That, you know, just being yourself even with your hair. Like,
yeah, but even then, like, every day I'm in the mirror like, man, I'm going to get rid of the fade. Like, I don't know. Should I grow should I get a taper? You know, like every day, like, I'm thinking of the next thing, and, like,
I'll tell you what, you're lucky
angle.
You even have options, because I have run out of those with my hair.
Bro.
Oh, yeah, hey, we're in the same fucking boat, man.
This beard, you gotta get creative with your beard at this point.
Yeah, they say that when you go bald, your beard is a beard is like a mohawk for a bald
exactly.
head.
Exactly.
Hey, you guys just, like, last month I had a beard down to here. I was, like, rocking the speaky beard. It was huge.
That's when I met you.
Yeah, exactly.
No lie, sometimes I wish I had facial hair just to try something new.
It's pretty,
like,
tight. I lucked out because I have a lot of facial hair, so I lucked out and I could play with it, but some people are mad patchy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey, the good thing is, like I said, girls love facial hair, bro. As I get older, I realize women.
See, I have a theory about that. I think that girls like posting about facial hair on Pinterest, but I don't think in real life they actually like it touching their faces or other body parts.
I just think they like it on some some like manly.
I think they like how it looks.
I think like how it is. Like it makes it like that's like a man. Like I think yeah, that's just kind of what they like. And kind of like he's really macho and manly.
Yeah, I get it. Very attractive. Totally
very alpha.
Very alpha.
Yeah. So I don't know. What are you guys? How long are you gonna do the internet thing? Does it seem like it's going smooth? And you guys want to keep going at it?
It's just getting started.
To be honest with you, we plan to be like a Frankie Beverly. Like we see, we have an opportunity to be a band that makes a certain type of music that can be around all the time. Like, you know, we study a lot of bands like that. We study even like Erykah Badu. Like we were talking about Erykah Badu, like, dude, like she survived so many waves of artists, trends, music, you know, like so many people in and out the game, but she's always been there because she made a type of music that called Tyrone still relevant to this day. Yeah. It still is deep, you know, other side of the game is still deep to this day. It doesn't get old.
And that's
still
the thing about soul music in general, is that when it comes from the soul, it's kind of formless and it kind of doesn't,
you
like
can't,
genre
yeah.
doesn't matter. Dude, Sam Cooke sounds as good today as
and,
it
and,
did
and
then.
And the stories that he's talking about with his women, they're relevant to this day. They're the exact stuff we go through. Yeah. So to me, it was like, you know, with our band, like I think very deeply on these types of things. Like I want our band to be around for a long time because I realize that's how you make the real money, is being on the road. You know, we're on the road and we can demand that type of money every night. So we're setting our band up as for the long haul. That's why we don't put out mixtapes. When you look back, we have albums, legacy of just our official things that are not just mixtapes that got lost somewhere in the internet.
Well, and they're not of the moment either. They have a certain timeless quality, and the fact that you guys are using real players and you guys have an actual band, like,
and just seeing our fan base grow. Like our fan base is like grown. Like I've noticed like the difference between this album and last album, where there was people that listened to the internet last album. Now we have actual people who are fans.
Yeah.
Cause there's a difference between people, listeners and fans. Yeah. Fans are the people that are going to buy your merch and
come
like
to the show.
Post your pictures, their avatar, and like a picture and do that type of stuff. A listener is somebody like, oh yeah, I fuck with them.
I mean, the thing that I like too is that I think, and this isn't a slight to the earlier albums, but I think that like you guys are clearly getting better as you go.
That's not together. A slight at all. You know that's a fact.
Like, and to me, that's a
facts.
That's such a hard thing to come by, because so many people blow their load on the first one and then they run out of ideas, and you can tell that you guys are learning and getting better together, and that's really refreshing.
I feel like that's like a generational thing. Like the whole, your debut album has to be like
the one,
you know, and I think it's out of comparison, you know, a lot, like, well, with the internet, not us, but with the internet, there's access to everything. So yeah, you'll find out about the 16-year-old who is just like the greatest singer ever and can dance and can, you know what I mean, like the Kehlani's and the Frank Ocean's, who like debut projects are just critically acclaimed.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like people put so much pressure on themselves to make their debut albums critically acclaimed. Right. And it's like, give yourself room to grow.
I always use the analogy of like Nas's career and Jay-Z's career, where Jay-Z got off to a slow start and it was an upward climb for most of the way, you know, and Nas got off to the races with Illmatic, and it was kind of slowly a downward curve with the output. And so it's like, you know, if you pace yourself and allow yourself to get better, you can really make it last a long time.
No, progress, dude. And that's why, we try to tell the younger cats we're around, and the guitar player in our band, he's also a solo act, you know, immense, one most talented guy I've ever been around. Like, we try to tell him, like, have room to grow. Like, you don't want to put out, you know, he's about to put out his first EP, and I'm just like, dude, have it a little rough around the edges. You don't want to put out something that's super polished, super, he's already arrived. You want people to be like, oh my gosh, like,
this
wait
is
till
dope.
He,
wait can't
till
wait
he,
till
yeah.
the next one.
Oh, I can't wait till the next
and
one.
And then
oh
with
my
the
God.
Next one, it's going to be like, obviously better.
Yeah,
you know
obviously
I mean?
Better.
You have to show people, and this is something that I'm just now coming to terms with, because like I said, like there's as an artist, there's so much pressure to make your first project the best.
The one, yeah, man. Right.
You know, and I've been victim to that.
Right.
Yeah, and I think our first project will, and it's funny because we're starting to get those like, nothing will ever be better than Purple Nail. Like, we get those every once in a while. Like, y'all's first album is, that's when y'all were really on like the wheel. You know, like how people really are, which is, like I said, I think I love our first time. I think our first time is a classic because it's real. Like, it's really where we were at. Like,
right.
It was never, it was really like we wanted to put out a random album of random stuff that we felt. So, and that's why I always feel like, and another thing is, like, we didn't get the chance to have demos or random songs. Our first song that we made together is on our first album. So, where a lot of these people get these demos, like these early underground releases that people don't know about, we literally started with the first songs that are on our album. So,
and we didn't really have a much of a budget either.
Yeah. And we didn't.
They knew I had a studio.
And no expectations. Right. And we really didn't have any expectations. So it was kind of like we had to grow from it because we weren't even planning on putting out an album. The internet was originally supposed to be, you know, the producers of Odd Future, like Left Brain, me, Sid, and Hal singing. And it was supposed to be like a 6-song thing we was going to put on the internet. Because that's when Odd Future was like super popping. So we were just like, we was going to do a little singing EP and just throw it out there. And like,
For the hardcore fans.
Yeah, like, oh shit, this is crazy. Like, they singing. And then that's why you have.
Yeah, at the time when you guys dropped, I felt like it could have been an Odd Future mixtape filled with fart sounds and it still would have sold.
And to be honest with you, that touches on another point that a lot of people don't see that we see because, of course, we're in it. Like, you know, it's hard for a lot of, you know, black artists that do soul music to cross over to white audiences because it's a very hard thing to, you know, give to them. And with Odd Future,
I would say an interesting thing about this, and I don't know, race borderlines are so fucking iffy to step on and whatever, but I'm a music fan and what I will say is that I think it's harder for like the quote unquote mainstream rhythm and blues artists to cross over. You know what
Definitely.
I mean? But then it's really easy for an
alt
group.
R&B.
Right. Since you guys were like an alt, like you guys are part of a punk rap collective, all of a sudden the white hipsters went, hey, these guys are making soul music and soul music is
edgy. It's edgy. Yeah. Too. So that's why
have you guys had a problem with like mainstream, quote unquote mainstream R&B fans? Like, is the black audience following you, or are you getting stuck with a bunch of white
hipsters?
That's
the thing. That's what I'm saying.
That's awesome.
It's backwards, man. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Our career is very, it's interesting because it's backwards. Yeah. Like, where most artists that do our type music, the black audience is the one that finds out about them, and then white mainstream or mainstream people start to understand it. But with us, we were exposed to,
our future fans
that are mostly Caucasian. Yeah, let's just be honest. So they knew about us before. So, because we went and did BET, interview for the BET Awards a few weeks ago, and they were just like, whoa, you guys have 3 albums on Columbia? Like, what did you do to get that? You know what I'm saying? When we told them we did Coachella, they were like, whoa, like they were just like, how?
That's crazy,
like,
because I've never heard of you.
But if we go do Fader or Pitchfork, they're like, yo, that's so dope. You know, you guys did this. But what most people, it's complete opposite. So we're finally getting into those realms with this album. We are seeing, you know, we're getting played on the urban radios and stuff like that. So
I love the urban scene.
Yeah, I love it too. I was always mad. I'm not gonna lie, I felt some type of way that we weren't accepted into it because
in the beginning, because
we were trying to bring that to the mainstream. Like, let's bring like some really urban.
We wanted black people to like us, honestly.
And then for a minute, it wasn't happening like how we wanted it to.
Yeah, that was like the interesting thing is like, I mean, even just in the last couple of years, like Frank Ocean was getting accepted by white audiences and white critics so much so fast. And then, but Miguel had a hard time at first, I felt like.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, for some reason, a lot of times just with R&B, like black and white audiences are on a different page.
And let's be honest, it's all about who you come up with. Like, let's just be honest. John Legend came up with Kanye. Kanye came up with Jay-Z. Jay-Z came up with like, everybody has somebody a clique, somebody that liaisons them into whatever we had
and
Odd Future.
Yeah, Frank had Odd Future,
too. Frank had Odd Future.
Right.
He had the edgy.
Not only was it the white Odd Future fans that were looking at him,
it was the industry.
White people behind the scenes.
That's the whole thing. And that's what I mean is like the white critics are the ones that brace on
it. And it was before people made up their mono Odd Future. That was another thing. It was before it was a, it was like, that was when like everybody was like, oh, let me see what they about. So
everybody's talking about them.
Yeah, so, and that's another thing we try to tell you, like timing is perfect. Like we realized this album had to come out when it came out, because Ego Death, if it came out any later, it would have got swallowed up, especially with all like the beefs that come up on the internet. Like, that's real. Like, that distracts people from things coming out. Like, we hit at a perfect time where all like Miguel's album came out, Vince, like good music was also coming out. So it really did good for us just to, you know, timing purposes and hitting at a time where a lot of that type of music wasn't really dropping. Like, no, I mean, there hasn't been a band to drop music like us in a while. So, you know.
Hey, man, you guys are killing it. We did an hour. How did it, that went by quick.
Yeah.
I feel like we did what we set out to accomplish.
Right on.
Yeah, man.
Real quick, I do want to say, we worked with Vince in the past, too. We did that Knocksteady video of him on the white wall. That was us.
Nice. Oh,
yeah, that was, like, the first thing that I think, first video of his ever on the internet, I think.
That was one of his, like, first big videos, I remember.
Yeah.
A lot of views.
That was us. And that's what I base our performances now off of, was, like, we did that, and we had just moved into this office space, and we didn't really have anywhere to shoot our videos yet. So I was like, let's just do it on a white wall with a fucking light right on his face. It came out amazing. And now 4 years later, it's like, dude, his music that he's making right now is so fucking great. And his writing has grown so
really
much.
Really happy for him.
Yeah. He's in a good space, man. Vince is a good dude, man.
It seems like his label cares about him too.
They care about him.
I believe that.
Vince is like, if you know Vince, like, he's just like a really, really, like, legit, like, you want him to win. Like, he has a personality that he's very genuine.
You can tell he's about his business.
He's about his business, and he just really wants to win. He doesn't care about distracting you. He just wants to win.
In the little time that I've been around him, he's so sharp too, and his dry sense of humor. He'll get a joke in with every fucking sentence if you let him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. When I first came around, I used to feel weird. I was like, how old is Vince? Like, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, he was mad
he's
young.
Got a really old
he
soul.
Looked real young, but, like, he would just talk with way too much assertiveness. Like, it was just like,
yeah,
like, what it like? It, you know how Vince is? He's just very, like, he has, like, every
even like watching him like start performing, because, you know, he was on that Mac Miller tour with us, and
man,
that was like one of his first tours. Ooh. And you know, like, he, like, the whole tour, I think during his set, he was rapping most of the songs
with his arms crossed. Wow. Nervous.
Like, he was nervous, but at the same time, he was telling, like, hands up. I said hands up. You know what I mean? Like, he was super assertive with his words,
well,
but his
crazy.
Body language was.
I mean, I remember that show that him and Speak threw at an art space, and I remember you were there. And I was just like, God damn, this fool Vince really, Vince and Speak got something going on right now, because that was insane how packed it was.
Yeah.
And he brought the whole
hood
out.
And that show you, man, you got to go through, and that touched on another
point,
man.
That was early,
man.
That was like 11.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. People think that's what I'm saying, you got to start, man. There's so many phases you go through, so many, you know,
straight up
errors you go through with people, so many missed opportunities that you waste your time on to realize that you don't need to wait, that you need to spend your time on it. Like, it's such a journey to really make. Like, we're just getting to the point where we're making money as a band, and we're very grateful for it. But
we're
it's
just
like,
getting into the thick of it. Like, dude, every conversation is, okay, how are we going to do the stage plot for this tour?
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, we need to buy signs for this. Like, how are we going to do the merch?
Man, you got
to, like,
live it. Real talk, you got to live it, bro.
Tour,
you got to live it. Everybody I know that's successful, they live what they do. Like,
every
Mac
day, it's
to
like
Tyler,
something.
To Jimmy Douglas, to Mike Einzinger. Like, everybody that is does what they do and is rich off of it, that they live it to a point to where almost to a fault sometimes.
Yeah.
But you have to be like relentless
all
about
the way
it.
In.
Yeah, you have to be all
you
the way
to
in.
You have to look at it
you
from
just
every
opened
angle.
Up a line of questioning. Now we're going to run long. Fuck it. When you say to a fault, do you feel interpersonal relationships
because as an artist it's hard, man. Like, sometimes you just want to be alone. Like, that is the crazy thing about an artist, man. Like,
oh, I need my alone time.
You have to have, you know what it's like, man. You have to have that, just like, and it's so crazy because you have to apologize for it. You feel guilty just like, because you feel like with most people when they do that, they're bullshitting, like, you really want to, like, but with artists, it's like, dude, like, with her, like, she records by herself. I have so many songs of me singing, so many beats, but nobody's seen me make a beat in the last 5 years or sing a song in the last 5 years. But I have mad songs where I sing and mad beats that I make. It's just something about, like, you know, like, going through, like, you know, when somebody's in a room when you're making a beat and then you're going through sounds and they just trash sounds. Like, as a producer, when you're by yourself, it don't matter. You're just going through sounds. But when somebody's in, you're just like,
well, it's so vulnerable. Creating is
trash.
So vulnerable.
Like,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man.
And you really expose your kind of crazy when you're creating,
you got,
too.
Dude,
you
have to create the type of songs that matter, you have to go to a weird area sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You have
very,
to do some,
like,
shit sometimes that's like, doesn't make sense.
That's embarrassing
at all.
If somebody's in a room. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. And I always think the best songs that I've written are ones that I'm sure someone that I care about is going to be offended by them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, no,
because you're really digging into it. You're really digging into personal places.
And because that touches on another, we keep touching on.
Yeah.
Segways.
Go ahead.
That touches on another thing. Like, I think a lot of talentless music is based on a lot of real situations and not just fake, like a vague subject of just partying. Like, a lot of those old Al Green records, old Marvin Gaye records are based on real females in real situations.
Oh, yeah.
That, like I said, still go on. So, like I said, we got Just Saying is going to be a song 50 years from now. People are still going to be dealing with people that are just like, okay, we're done. Like, I'm just saying, we're like, it's when you make that type of music, that's, you know, that's relevant to the situations. That's why I said, I feel
that,
like,
people can relate.
You'll never truly die. You'll always have relevancy because those situations. That's why we don't mention MySpace and Instagram in our music, because, you know, one time,
think about
all the music, all those rap songs that had MySpace in it.
So many, so many rap punchlines from like 04 to 08 are like, and your mom's in my top 8.
Yeah, my MySpace. Check my MySpace. Yeah. And ad-libbing on the song, like, oh, this is old.
That was when, back in that era when I was hearing people doing that, I was like, oh yeah, you should never mention the technology.
Yeah, that's why I feel like NERD.
Like, imagine how many fucking songs talking about, oh yeah, I got her on the Razor flip phone. Like, what? Damn, that's
or videos
damn,
with the old bro. iPod, old iPod in it. Like, okay, yeah, this is old. But no, that's what I said. That's why I feel like NERD is, like I said, you have all these spawns of NERD where Odd Future is, all of us are like stands. Like, everybody in Odd Future, would consider a Pharrell stand, like, to some extent. So, and NERD, In Search Of, is a very influential album on all of us. And, like, a lot of people that do music that has nothing to do with In Search Of, you go talk, they're like, yeah, man. Like,
yeah, that album was very quietly influential. Okay, so the spliff, we brought that up earlier. Yeah. Like, Verbs, who used to throw it, is one of my close friends. And I would, like, back in the day when that was going on, I'd be like, man, where do these people come from? Because his shows would be so packed. And I would oftentimes be one of the only, like, 4 white people there. You know, he'd be like, bro, we just got, like, the cool black nerds on lock. You know, he was like, it's the cool black West Side nerds. And that was the shit that you'd always hear in the parking lot. I was like, NERD bumping. Like, people loved NERD.
That touched on nothing. Like, growing up as a black person in a black community, like I said, it's me going to a hood school. NERD spoke directly to me, bro. Like, I was a nerdy black kid that kind of like that kind of had like the artistic view that came from, like, I'm gonna be honest, like, a school where they taught me a little bit more about, like, I came from a better school.
Yeah.
So, like, I was outcasted as, like, the nerdy black kid that kind of people thought was trying to act white because I didn't talk crazy.
And I wasn't, but I felt the same way because went to a private school.
Just being outcasted because of, for no real reason. You know, I was outcast because I was bigger when I was younger. Not fat, but just I was bigger than everybody else. And you know, it's jealousy. If I'm 5'10 in 8th grade and everybody else is 5'6, you know, 5'5, they're gonna
be mad that I'm pulling sophomores.
It's just, so, you know, NERD really spoke to, I feel like, a lot of every kid.
Outcasted.
Tyler was an outcast. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he and speaking of Outkast as well, is a huge influence, of course. But you know, Tyler was an outcast as far as just like how he is. We're outcasts. You know, a lot of people in our band are outcasts from. But now it's cool. Now they're the cool kids. But
right. Exactly.
Originally, you're an outcast.
Meek shall inherit the earth, except for Meek Mill.
Yeah, man.
Bar. Shout out Meek Mill.
But okay, here this brings me to, like, kind of my last topic about you guys in a shared theme that you guys have in your life seems to be, and this term is so fucking played out, but curation. Like, you guys are, like, really up on shit, and the fact that you're working with Vince so early is proof in that. Just the shit that the whole Odd Future collective would be used to kind of, like, latch onto and tweet about or talk about seem to, like, kind of always. You guys were always early guessers. You know what I mean? Like, whether it be Waka or Gucci Mane or whoever, like, you guys
Space
are kind of.
Space Ghost Perp.
Space Ghost Perp is a perfect example. Like yes. I mean, dude, Speak was telling me about Space Ghost. Like,
he put me on Space Ghost and I started playing him before
early.
Every Odd Future
and,
show.
And I'll tell you, I didn't get it. I was like, yo, this shit is too young for me or something. I don't know. But he was right. So you guys are always, like, very. Oh, Lil Ugly Man, I feel like.
Oh,
maybe.
Hell yeah.
You right?
Even, like, Keish. Like, a lot of people, man.
You guys are mad early on. Shit, where do you think that comes from? Just, like, a constant curiosity or something, or what? Like, where do you guys find the shit that you're listening to?
I think it's by chance. I mean, we're genuine fans of these people. It's not just like, oh, this is what y'all like. Okay, I'll play it. You know, like, I really loved that Space Ghost Perp song. Like, I really like that song a lot. Like,
I'm just keep going. I think we have a good ear. I think we have a good ear. I think
it's just our genuine take.
I think we have a good ear for, like, genuine, like, next level
shit.
Well,
absolutely. I agree with that you guys have a good ear. And I would also say that, like, it goes back to the point about comfortable in your skin. Whether you feel that way or not, I feel like even being kind of that early on things and willing to say before it is a trendy thing that, like, yo, I fuck with this.
Oh.
Like, that's being comfortable in your skin. You
I
know?
Love McConan. That is another one, bro. Dude, I'm going to tell you this, bro.
You want to hear my... Okay, so he put me on I Love McConan, too. I was in the studio. Actually, I think with one of the dudes that was in your band was there recording him at Warner or something. He goes...
Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, who's next? Speak. And he goes, I Love McConan. And I'm like, what? Play it for me. And he starts playing Club Going Up before the Drake remix came out. And I went, I don't know if I get it right now. I was like, I don't know. It just sounds like it sounds like Future, but way weirder, you know?
But
then I went home. It was like my first time eating sushi, though, because I didn't like it. But then I went, like a week later, I went, man, I really want to eat some of that again, because I think maybe I liked it. And then that's how it was. I like searched out McConan, and then I got into like Don't Sell Molly No More. And I was like, oh, wait, actually, this fool is a genius. And then the Drake remix came out.
Yeah, bro. So,
you guys are like, mad early. Go.
McConan, it's weird how I've heard about McConan. Like, I'm from Atlanta. So, McConan, like, just in my friend circle, like, even Father. Like, Father used to hang at my best friend's house. Like, they all used to be at her house.
We have Fat on the show. He's cool as
shit. Yeah, man. Like, so, McConan, like, I heard about McConan. He had, like, 100 views on his videos, bro. And I remember Man of the Party, bro. That was, like, the band's anthem.
Man of the Party
is the most lo-fi, like, terribly mixed McConan song of all time. It was just something about him. I was like, it's just something. I don't want to sound so crazy. Like, I'm just going to sound crazy. But it's just something about certain energy and artists that I see. And I'm just like, yo, it's something about him that, like, he has it. Like, when I saw McConan, I was like, I didn't think McConan's going to be no crazy. But I was like, he's going to be, like, madder because he has an interesting look. And he just something about him that makes you want to know more. Like, when you see him, just like...
Had his face covered on like everything and was just like walking around Vegas.
But he had curly hair. And it was like a light skin curly hair.
You could tell
he
was light skin, and he had like the like in the video.
Yeah,
the doll heads.
Yeah,
that's old. Like he's been doing that for a long time, and I don't know what that represents.
And that's that
for
shit.
Him,
where,
but.
It's intangibles that you can grasp onto as a music lover, and it's so hard trying to explain it to people who worry so much about technical shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you talk to some backpack rap kids and they'll be like, oh, fuck that. Like, da 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 da, he's talented. It's like, you just don't understand.
No bars.
You don't understand the energy.
That's what backpack rap is. I think it's in the superstar status when you really accept yourself. I think most people don't accept themselves, so they gravitate towards artists that are super self-confident. I think self-confidence is why people love celebrities, because they don't have that, and celebrities exude the ultimate. People see Rihanna and Beyonce, they're just like, oh my gosh, like, what could get to them? And that makes women feel like empowered. So I feel like when you see people like McConan owning himself, and like the curly hair goofy guy with the thing, he owns it. It's just like, you joke at like, what's this? But it's just like, man, he really ride for himself. Like, you respect it at the end of the day. And I think ultimately everybody respects people that are really comfortable in their own skin, because most people are not. And I think that's really what it comes down to.
I'll tell you what, you should be a fucking motivational speaker, bro.
Man,
you're good at this.
Here's the thing, bro. Like, that's why I'm like the big brother in the band, bro.
I can tell.
Like,
I'm sure that you give pep talks and you're good at it.
My keyboard player, Jamil, like, he'll call me all the time just to like have like, so what do you think about this, man? Let's need to talk about it. So, I understand, like, man, like, growing up, like, especially where a lot of the guys in the band are, like, you just need somebody older that you can, like, talk to, like, about stuff that don't have no malice towards it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we still get into it. Like, I get into it with my keyboard player all the time, but at the same time, he knows, like, if somebody come and talk to him the crazy way, like, I'm going to hop on them crazy. You know what I'm saying? It's really like a brotherhood.
He knows that you ride for him.
Yeah, like, because we both grew up with, you know, all of us grew up with siblings. So it's like, we understand that, like, hey, man, but the next moment, like, you ready? You want to go get some food? Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's, that's how our band really works. And that's really why I feel like we'll be together for a good bit, because, you know, like, even how we're planning on running our business, like, we take a lot from Tyler. Tyler was very fair with how he ran Odd Future.
Right.
And we more than fair,
more
actually.
Than fair. And we want to be more than fair with our band as well, because it gives people more incentive. Like, you'll never, I guarantee you're probably never going to hear nobody say nothing about Tyler. No matter what happens with people in Odd Future, nobody's going to come back saying Tyler did them wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody. Right. That's why you never heard it. Right. Throughout all the Odd Future, you'll never somebody say nothing bad about Tyler, because right. no matter what you say about Tyler, his attitude, Tyler was fair to his homeboys, and he right. looked out in a way that most artists would not look out. So you got
to
respect it.
And that's a real thing where, like, if you don't inherently have that, you have to learn that, because if you're fair with people and you fucking split the money better than you even should, like, people are always going to want to do business with you, and they're always going to want to.
And Tyler was smart. Tyler knew he was going to make more money, period, because right. he was smart. And right. I spent 2-3 years behind the scenes watching Odd Future and how Tyler moved, how Sid moved, how this all works. So now that we're about to start running the internet, you know, business similar, we're yeah. trying to do our own thing. You know, we take a lot from, you know, the mistakes and the good things that happened with Odd yeah. Future, you know, and a lot of the good things that Tyler did, you know, really resonated with us and how we were running off. Our band. So, right. you know, so.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, man.
I got to tell you, I love you guys' passion. I thought this was a great conversation. I appreciate you guys taking the time to do it.
It's nothing.
What is happening next? You guys are going on tour for like a long time,
tour,
right?
Tour, man. Yes. We're going to be on the road for like the next year
and a half.
So here's
the thing. By the time we put this out, you guys will be just about ready to leave. So, like, where are you guys starting at?
We're starting here, actually, yeah. kind of. September 8th, we're
big show in LA.
Yeah,
at the
first LA show. Yeah.
You gotta give me the guest list.
Nah, you already know.
I'm a snob. Let me get it on the side. <search. No. laughs>
And then we're doing Atlanta on the 12th, the One Music Fest.
Awesome.
And then and that's then when our tour starts.
Yep.
And then you guys go straight to the UK.
UK is November. Back. Yeah, November. Oh, okay. So our last show on the US tour is November 5th.
Yeah.
And then we'll do the carnival, which will be in like the middle of November, and yeah. then we'll do the UK after that.
That'll be rad. So the whole country, are you going nationwide?
Yep. Yes. Biggest tour we've been on, man.
So longest,
super important tour. Whatever the closest major city that you are in and listening to the show,
coming everywhere,
you
man.
Will be able to catch Sid and Matt and the internet performing from the new record Ego Death, which is great. If you if you guys haven't heard it, go listen to it.
Yeah.
Where can they find you online? Because
the internet.
If you actually Google the internet,
yeah,
is the SEO strong enough to where you guys pop up?
Yeah.
Yep, we're the first
people
that pop
That's
up.
That's what we tell
Picture
people now. Just Google us.
And it's been proven in person. Like, it's funny. We did
you
it.
You sons of bitches. One of the, That's one of, so funny.
Nah, one of the radio dudes did it because, like, we said it and he was like, oh, yo, let me look. And I was like, yo, is it? And I was thinking, like, yeah. dang. Like,
he was why like,
I
was typing.
Yo. I was like, dang, is it? But,
we might be real embarrassed right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I was dead ass scared. I was like,
but well, it's ironic because we can't get the internet Twitter name.
Yeah,
we're
like,
still trying to get the internet
the dude,
Twitter name.
You know what it is?
The Twitter is at Internets. Right?
Internets.
Yeah.
Oh, spell it.
INTANETZ.
Yes.
So we tried to get the internet name,
it's
but
so
the dude,
hard
but
to
the
tell.
Dude's not. The dude seems like a very arrogant asshole who's probably just loves because he responds to everybody like, "Hey, it's the internet. Have a nice day."
Yeah.
So it looks like he gets kick off of having the internet
right.
little
exactly.
name.
And he right. actually tweeted us and said and that our album was fire.
We're the only people he follows.
He follows. Bro. One person.
It's us. And we DM'd, bro. He ignored
us. I DM'd him like, what do we have to do to trade like names?
Yeah.
He ignored us. He has not said anything.
That son of a bitch.
So I'm kind of salty.
He's probably some nerd at home.
We're working on some trade
marks. I'll tell you, whenever you guys first announced the first record, I went... The internet, I said, damn, the SEO game is going to be real hard on that
yeah.
shit.
Dude, her mom used to get on me all the time, like, so why? Like, you guys' name is going to be a problem. But one thing I realized, man, like, if we stopped, yes, then it was like, whatever. Yeah. But if we keep going, like, the internet will be synonymous with us, bro. Like, let's be real,
own
man.
It.
My rap name is Intuition, and that's not and it's spelled the normal way, and that's not a very fucking SEO-friendly name either. But I remember, particularly after, like, Jewel put out that song called Intuition, uh-huh. which was a terrible look for me. But I remember the day I was like, oh, hey, it's starting to work, was, like, the day that I YouTubed Intuition, and my video popped up before Jewel, and I was like, we made it!
Yeah.
I said, Mama, we
yeah,
ready.
Man.
That's
yeah.
how I feel.
You keep pushing for it, man. Like that's really what. Because I like when we first came out, we did not come up nowhere.
Yeah.
Towards nowhere.
Nowhere.
So,
funny.
So funny. Yeah, man. I'm very grateful. We can.
But yeah, the new record Ego through. Death just dropped in
Ego
what
Death.
July, right?
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, man.
Videos? What videos did you guys put out for it? Girlfriend?
Girl.
That's right.
And we're working on another video right now. All right.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So you can find them on Twitter at internets with a Z at the end, right?
Mm-hmm. www.internet-band.com.
Bang, bang. Find them in your nearest city all throughout September, October, and November, and then in the UK in November. And, yeah, thank you guys for coming in. That was dope. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man Ben Shim behind the boards making the shit sound buttery at I Am Data Base, base with two S's. YouTube.com/kindaneat, where hopefully we're going to see a performance from you guys, but there's going to be some crazy scheduling shit because I leave for Alaska tomorrow.
We'll figure it out.
When I get back, we're going to do it, and it's going to be amazing, and I'm really excited about that video.
Definitely.
YouTube.com/kindaneat. Be sure to subscribe to that. Just broke 40,000 subscribers. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and following along with that. What else? Go to your phone, go to the App Store, download the podcast app, search for Kinda Neat and subscribe, leave a 5-star rating and tell us who you want to see on the show. And facebook.com/kindaneat. And other than that, I think that's it.
Woo.
That is all.
What's
the,
up, Mom?
That's all the internet stuff. We're here with the internet. That was Sid and Matt. I'm Lee. And this is officially Kinda Neat.
Pretty
hey,
awesome.
What's up, Zaxby?
That was tight, man. You guys are fucking... You guys are...